Do Christians today just arbitrarily decide which commandments from the Hebrew Bible they want to continue to be relevant and which they don't? Hey everybody, I'm Dan McClellan. I'm a scholar of the Bible and religion. Let's take a look at a video.
That's my point.
That's convenient.
You're picking the one you don't want to keep for other reasons and saying that one doesn't apply. Why not say the other ones don't apply?
Why do Christians seem to follow some of the commands from the Old Testament, but not others? This video makes it appear like Christians are arbitrarily or maybe even nefariously picking and choosing the commands that they like while ignoring the ones they don't. The problem with this characterization is it doesn't accurately represent Christianity. It's a straw man.
All right, let's see it.
If you actually want to understand why Christians believe homosexual behavior is sinful, but wearing two different fabrics isn't, you need to understand the covenants. More specifically, the Old Testament contains the Mosaic Law. These were laws given by God through Moses to the chosen people of Israel to accomplish a very specific purpose. When Jesus came, he fulfilled the requirements of the law, and he established a new covenant through his death and resurrection. That's really important too. Under this new covenant, we can wear clothes with two different fabrics, and it's not because Christians are arbitrarily picking and choosing which commandments to follow. No, it's because Christians are following commands that apply to them under the new covenant. See your New Testament for more details.
So it is 100% arbitrary, and the biggest problem with punting to the New Testament for more details is if you go look in the New Testament, you will not find a single consistent framework for which laws continue to be relevant and which do not, much less why certain laws continue to be relevant and certain laws do not. The most popular frameworks for understanding which continue to be relevant and which do not for Christians are actually not in the New Testament at all. They were things that later Christians arbitrarily made up as they rationalized which laws should continue to be relevant and which should not. But let's start with what's in the New Testament. You actually have a spectrum of approaches, all the way from every last part of the law of Moses and then some extra things, down to none of the law of Moses and then some extra things. So if we look in the Gospel of Matthew, the author of Matthew was a Judaizer. You have to keep the law of Moses if you're a follower of Jesus, because heaven and earth will pass away before a single jot or tittle of the law passes away. Jesus came not to destroy, but to fulfill. Christians today will say, oh, well, he did fulfill the law. We're no longer under the law. You got to read the next two verses where Jesus says, anyone who teaches people not to do these things or breaks the least of these commandments, they're going to be called least in the kingdom of heaven. The one who does them and teaches others to do them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. And then Jesus says, your righteousness must exceed the righteousness of the Pharisees, or you will not see the kingdom of heaven. And then he starts quoting commandments and then ratcheting up their severity. You have heard the law says this, while I tell you this higher law. So the author of Matthew actually endorses keeping every last part of the law of Moses, including things like, yeah, you should not leave undone the tithing of dill and mint and cumin, but you also have to fulfill the weightier matters of the law. So that's the everything in the law of Moses and then some. We have something kind of in the middle in the book of Acts, at the end of the Jerusalem Council, Acts 15, verse 20, they decide, okay, people who come into following Jesus from outside of Judaism are not responsible for the law of Moses, but we're going to write down four laws. This is all they're responsible for. Abstain from idolatry, abstain from sexual immorality, abstain from things strangled, and abstain from blood. There are no Christians around today who say Christians have four laws, and they're all listed in Acts 15:20, because that's not really popular. And then on the other end of the spectrum, the no laws and then some, that's Paul, says we're not under the law anymore. But oh yeah, nature dictates that we have to do all this stuff or you won't see the kingdom of heaven. For instance, that long hair on a man is a disgrace, as nature indicates, which is laughably not true, but what Paul is doing here is taking Greco-Roman social conventions and elevating them to natural law. And for the most part, people have just ignored that. And then we get to the actual popular rationalization for which laws continue to be relevant and which do not. One is the notion that the Hebrew Bible divides the laws into ceremonial and moral And then many people add a third one that was developed, I think, first by Aquinas, the civil legislation. There are no such divisions anywhere in the Hebrew Bible, and the New Testament does not comprehensively outline any such divisions. That division actually originates in third century theological writings, primarily with Origen. So that is a post-biblical innovation as a means of rationalizing why we're going to keep some laws and not others. And one of the biggest problems with that is even in the New Testament and even in the Ten Commandments, some of the laws that are maintained are ceremonial. And some of the laws that are considered moral in the Hebrew Bible are not maintained. Now, the other popular one is the notion that if it's in the Hebrew Bible but is not mentioned in the New Testament, then it's no longer relevant. But if it's in the Hebrew Bible and then it is mentioned by the New Testament, and especially if it's mentioned by Jesus, then it continues to be relevant. This is also a post-biblical innovation, and this is another one that is inconsistently applied, because as I mentioned, according to Matthew, Jesus said all the law continues to be relevant, and Jesus explicitly quotes certain laws. So there's a bunch of stuff that Jesus repeats in the New Testament that most Christians just ignore today. And that's not even considering slavery. Laws about slavery are endorsed and repeated in the New Testament. There's no syllable of the Bible that in any way, shape, or form whatsoever questions the practice itself of buying and owning other humans. So if you endorse the notion that it's still in effect, if the New Testament or if Jesus repeated it, then why did we get rid of slavery? And what is common to all of this is that the consensus of the group determines what continues to be relevant. And that is why, after the 19th century, the overwhelming majority of Christians decided slavery, not for us anymore. We overruled the laws of the Bible. And Christians today, who like to appeal to these different frameworks for deciding what continues to be relevant and what does not, usually don't include the slave laws in whatever rationalization they prefer. The reality is that it is entirely arbitrary.
Here's what I am saying. No command from the Mosaic Law is incumbent upon me in virtue of being a part of that law. However, there are some commands that appear in the Old Testament that are repeated in the New Testament. That's because those commands are pointing to a universal moral law that is incumbent upon everyone.
So this is kind of merging the two contemporary rationalizations, the notion of eternal moral laws and temporary ceremonial laws, merged with the notion that if it's repeated in the New Testament, then it continues to be relevant. And of course, this has to ignore a ton of stuff that these Christians don't want to continue to be relevant.
For example, there is a command against adultery in the Old Testament, and that command is there because adultery is wrong. And that's why adultery is also prohibited in the New Testament.
Except the prohibition of adultery in the Hebrew Bible did not prohibit a married man from engaging in sexual intercourse with as many other unmarried women as he wanted, or sex workers, because it only prohibited women from engaging in premarital sex, and it only prohibited men from engaging in intercourse with other married women. In the New Testament, that changed. It's an entirely different law because both of them are socially and historically contingent, just like our approaches today to deciding what continues to be relevant and what does not is entirely socially and historically contingent.
In the same way, there is a command against homosexual sex in the Old Testament, and that command is there because it's wrong.
This is incorrect. The only thing that is prohibited in Leviticus 18 and Leviticus 20 is a man taking the insertive role in an act of male same-sex intercourse. And this is prohibited not just because generically homosexual sex was wrong. Female same-sex intercourse is nowhere even addressed, much less condemned in the Hebrew Bible. It was prohibited because they believed that that violation of the social hierarchy of domination and penetration would generate a kind of metaphysical contaminant that would get out onto the land. And if that contamination reached a critical mass, then the land would vomit out the inhabitants. So that is an entirely false rationalization of the intuitive sexual disgust response on the part of the Holiness Code authors.
And that's why it's also prohibited in the New Testament.
No, in the New Testament, it is prohibited by Paul because he understands same-sex intercourse to be the product of a refusal to appropriately worship God. And so God removes the governor or the ceiling that they have placed on sexual desire so that it is allowed to bubble over and go in all kinds of inappropriate directions, resulting only among Gentiles in same-sex intercourse. Again, it's an entirely false rationalization for what ultimately comes down to an intuitive sexual disgust orientation.
Now, you might not agree with the conclusion, but at least accurately understand how Christians get to their conclusion rather than creating a straw man.
Christians get to their conclusions by considering the needs and the exigencies of their group within their contemporary social circumstances in light of their goals for the future, and then they go in search of a rationalization and a proof text that authorizes.
Pointing out how Christians fail to follow a bunch of temporal mosaic laws, like the prohibition against wearing clothes made of two different fabrics, only reveals a lack in understanding of how the covenants work.
Most of the laws in the Hebrew Bible that are dismissed as no longer relevant by Christians and as temporal laws are actually repeatedly described in the Hebrew Bible as eternal laws.
The Mosaic Law was limited to a time and nation, but objective morality isn't. In other words, Christians follow the moral law, not the Mosaic Law.
No, Christians have always followed whatever laws have served the interest of the group, and as history repeatedly demonstrates, that has always been arbitrary and negotiable. And the fit for this video is Frog and Toad.